Hello and welcome to NJBiz Conversations. I'm your host, Jeff Kanaj. My guest today is Scott Rutter. He is the president of the New Jersey County Business Association, the president and founder, I should say, of the County Business Association. That's the leading trade group for the state's cannabis industry. Scott, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for joining me. I appreciate it. Now, you've been involved in this industry for a long time, or as long as anybody could be involved in it, I guess. For those viewers unfamiliar with your recent career, you founded the association in 2016. You're also the founder and the owner of Township Green Dispensary in Riverside, which is going to be on Scott Street, which is kind of cool. You've also a former public official, mayor of Medford Township, and you were a member of the state assembly from 2008 to 2014. And that's where I want to start. Back then, when you were a public official, did you ever think New Jersey would get to this point now where we have, you know, if not a thriving, at least an established industry on both the medical and adult recreation side? I mean, back then, did you foresee this day?
You sort of did, because you were following it going across the country, right, with medical, right? So medical was really making strides, a lot of research there's a lot of benefits that people were feeling. Choosing cannabis over, say, opioids or alcohol for that matter. And so medical was led the way. Nice. So I started following this just as an interest, right? So when I was mayor, certainly not an issue for me. When I was in the state assembly, we had, you know, debates and discussions with regard to medical use. Sure. It passed in 2009. So yeah, so I started following it, but it wasn't a key issue for me. It wasn't until I took a trip out to Colorado with people like Senator Nick Scutari, who was the bill sponsor, the godfather of the legislative efforts, and other legislators and some industry people. And we toured facilities. We met with their law enforcement. We met with their division taxation. So we met with like their government officials. We toured the actual dispensaries and cultivation facilities. And I saw a very professional industry. So I was given a tour of a cultivation facility by the vice president of quality assurance, right? So things that you would see in traditional manufacturing businesses, you saw the same roles and responsibilities in the cannabis industry. And I knew right then and there that this was happening, that there's too much data that shows the benefits of cannabis, all the data that showed the danger, what happened, the negatives of the sort of the war on cannabis. You know, we were, the state of New Jersey at the time was spending, you know, $115 million incarcerating people for small possession. So let's, you know, let's change the paradigm, and let's start, instead of arresting young people who won't be able to get a college degree or join the military or get a mortgage, instead of like ruining their lives, let's create jobs and opportunity, generate some tax dollars for the state and local municipalities. So yeah, unexpected journey, so to speak. Didn't know that I would be here, but I'm really happy with what we've accomplished and where we're going.
Now, it's interesting that you talked about going to Colorado. I'm curious as to how the experience of other states played into changing attitudes in New Jersey. Was that a really important factor to see that Colorado and some other places were actually getting it done, and the sky hadn't fallen? Right. There was not, you know, there wasn't rampant drug use in the streets, that kind of thing. How important was the experience and bringing that experience back here in convincing folks that this could actually work here?
100%. It was really important to see, because you can use the lessons learned. You can look at the crime statistics and all the other data that really dissuaded. So the stereotypes and stigmas associated with cannabis, like if I have a cannabis store, there's going to be nothing but potheads outside smoking. Right. It's going to be disruptive. And that's not at all the case. It doesn't happen in Colorado. It doesn't happen in New Jersey. In fact, it's very discouraged. I mean, you know, if you're going to have a dispensary in your town or any cannabis business in your town, there's so much security that goes with that, all these cameras and equipment, personnel that walk the stores or the grounds. It is one of the safest industries that you can find based on all the security that we had, but it was also the lessons learned from other states that we applied. So it's not just, you know, what the impact is on a municipality, but how the regulations and how the laws are impacting the businesses, and how we are learning again from them and what we're experiencing right now and things we want to see changed.
Okay. Now I started there and I asked those questions because I just saw an interview that you had done with someone else back in 2018. And that's not that far. That's not that long ago. Yeah. Yet the questions were all really along the lines of what the heck is happening here? What is this? What's going on? You know, really basic stuff. And so it's, on the one hand, it seems like a lot's happened in just a fairly compact period of time. On the other hand, there are a lot of critics who say that the state has moved too slowly to develop the industry since the voters approved recreational use. How would you assess the progress that's been made since that vote to where we are today? Is it moving quickly enough as far as you're concerned?
No, it's not moving fast enough, and there's a lot of factors for that. So the state has approved a significant amount of licenses in all the categories: cultivation, manufacturing, and retail. The approvals are there. The challenge for these individual businesses, like myself, it's the you have to raise the money for this. This is not a traditional business, so you're not going to the federal government for a small business loan. Most banks won't do business with cannabis at this point, until the federal law changes. So the opportunity to, once you get your approval, to actually execute on that and buy the building, buy the equipment, hire personnel, all that stuff takes a lot of time, money, and energy. And so a lot of people are finding those are the challenges. But then those who are moving forward, they're finding that there's a lot of bureaucratic things that need to be fixed. Like, for example, if I want to hire an employee, it'll take 50 days for a background check to come through. So I have to hire somebody, hold them for 50 days before I make a single dollar.
Right.
So, as startup companies like myself, that's one of the biggest challenges. It's not just raising the money, which is significant. It's not just getting municipal approval, which is significant. It's just now that that's done, how am I hiring staff? How am I getting myself started? That's a big challenge. So there's things we want to do this year. The New Jersey Cannabis Association wants to do this year, working with our peers in the industry to help, put a spotlight on some of these challenges that can be fixed rather easily.
Okay. Well, I want to get to those in a second, but first I want to ask you about a couple of things that apparently are happening, and that is some new licenses regarding delivery, wholesale, and distribution. How are those changes going to affect the development of the market? I mean, are those going to be significant, and where do you think that'll lead eventually?
Well, I think they will be significant. I think there's a lot of folks looking at that as a new market. It's hard to tell how impactful the wholesale will be in a state the size of New Jersey. Certainly, when you look at states like New York or California, or Colorado, where they're significantly larger states, that makes a lot of sense. So I know there are people working out the solutions for that and how that could be a very much of a benefit. And distribution clearly will be a very important part, how we getting the products from the manufacturers, cultivators, to the retailers or the wholesalers. And then delivery is going to be game changing, and it's going to be game changing. It's going on right now for patients. So
Okay.
people who may not have readily access to vehicles and things like that. So we're going to see delivery going from just patient only to adult consumers, like you see a lot of other delivery services. And so each individual retailer, dispensary operator will make a decision whether or not delivery works for them. But I would assume that most of us in this space, in the retail space, will be utilizing delivery as well. So it'll be more convenient. But again, there's a lot of new areas that are evolving right now. So we'll see. But I'm excited to see those new licenses becoming available.
Yeah, I wonder how important specifically delivery would be, only in that folks just sort of may not want to be seen going into a dispensary. That sounds like it could significantly expand the market
It's a
once
good
they
option.
really.
Yeah, it's a good option. It would help definitely help expand the market for sure.
Okay. Let me ask then about the Cannabis Regulatory Commission. I'm curious as to and I know you've probably got business before them right now, so I don't expect to badmouth them, but I am curious about how you think they're operating, and whether they are doing everything that they can do to develop to help develop the business in the state.
Yeah, I mean the CRC, the Cannabis Regulatory Commission, had a huge hurdle put in front of them, right, just to get started. So they were, as they were established, they were dealing with lawsuits from the past. They had to deal with that. They had to create rules and regulations, and then they had to set up a process for how people are submitting it, and then how we're submitting their applications for licenses and how they're being evaluated. So definitely in the beginning, things took a lot of time for approvals to come out. But that's just the nature of being one. They were startup themselves, the CRC, dealing with all this stuff in the past. And then, but I know now that a lot of the application process specifically, things are running a lot smoother, and things are coming out a little more timely. In fact, they just had a meeting yesterday, so there's a lot more licenses that have hit the street as of yesterday. So that's a great thing. And that, but there's things that need to be improved. Like, for example, advertising restrictions right now that are put on our industry that are not on other industries. You know, if you're a startup company and you're going to be competing with another company that's been established for 10 years, you want every little bit that you can get to sort of promote yourself. So we're going to talk, we're going to be having conversations with regulators and lawmakers with regard to how we can make those improvements. And as I was saying earlier, just starting up, there are ways that right now we're told it's going to take up to 50 days for background checks. There's nobody more concerned about the quality of the employee and the safety of our customers than the actual operators ourselves. And so we're going to be having conversations on how we can speed up that process or put more of the burden on us as retailers or cultivators, manufacturers, on us making sure that we're doing the background checks. It's just, how can I get people started faster? How can I start to generate those sales earlier? And that's so we can create those jobs and that in turn creates those sales, which in turn funds the tax dollars to the municipalities and the state. So there's process improvements that are needed, and we're going to be working on with the lawmakers and regulators this year.
Okay. And what do you think of the bureaucratic process that, that the CRC goes through? I'm thinking specifically of a couple of recent instances where the agency, the commission, imposed fines on some multi-state operators for patient access despite the staff, or at least the executive director, Jeff Brown, being against that. It's kind of unusual for an agency to do that, for the commission to go against the staff. Is that working? I'm sorry, go ahead.
It comes across punitive, for sure.
Right.
So there needs to be a standard so that we all understand exactly what these fines are going to be, what the rules are. So I know that there are these discussions at the CRC about whether or not somebody should be fined or not. What we want on the industry side is standardization. We want to know for sure that these are this is what the cost is for the violating that. And we all want to work together collectively. We really do. I mean, this is something that we see in other states where the industry and the government collaboratively work together to ensure a safe and sustainable and inclusive industry. So that's, we all share the same goals and objectives, but some of these fines have come across rather punitive, and I think that there needs to be a standard process so that it's all very clear to the industry.
Okay, so let's talk about the future. I'm curious about where you see both the agency going and the legislature, and what you're looking for. Let's start with the legislature. You mentioned some of the policy changes that you think might be necessary. What are you watching in the State House this year? What do you expect might happen? Not only you personally and in your role as a business person, but also your members and your role as an advocate for the association.
Yeah, I wear a lot of different hats, and again, I'm a former lawmaker too, so I know exactly some of the concerns that they have, and it's really interesting trying to put all these pieces together. I know that there's a lot of frustration with those in the legislature about the process that goes on at the CRC. There's a lot of frustration at the local levels as well. Local mayors having questioning about what the rules are, regulations are, what they can and can't do. There's a lot of confusion that's out there. There's a lot of angst that's out there on the lawmaker's side. So I definitely appreciate that. I've worn those hats. My concern is what happens with that. And that's where we want to be able to be the voice of the industry, because not all things are as bad as they may seem. We see that. We definitely are the ones most impacted by these rules and laws. And so we are the ones who want to see these changes happen. But we don't want to do it in a way that's disruptive. We don't want to do it in a way that could hurt accidentally applicants who are going through a process, hurt accidentally those who are looking to raise money for their small businesses by creating bad headlines and things like that. I think there's a process that we can utilize that we can get the reforms that we want, the legislative and regulatory changes, without being overly disruptive to the entire process and hurting those applicants, those of us who have been in this process for 2 years or more, just to get started. So my heart goes out to all of our startups, all these small mom and pops who put their finances on the line, their savings on the line, their futures on the line, and going all in with their own personal investments and raising money. I don't want them to be hurt in this process. So as I talk to my former colleagues in the legislature, as I talk to regulators at the CRC, I want to make sure everybody's very clear, do no harm. The first thing is, do no harm to those who are going through this process. Yes, we have to make changes. Yes, there's things that need to be improved. Absolutely. But let's make sure that we're not harming our constituency at the same time.
Okay. And is what may or may not happen in Washington more important actually to the business than what would happen in Trenton? I'm asking because we hear a lot about the need for banking and financial services, and that's difficult, if not impossible, given the federal government's attitude toward cannabis. Is there you have any sense for whether Washington may step in?
Washington is stepping in. So one of the
Okay.
things, there's different things. It's an election year. It's a presidential election year on top of congressional. I don't expect to see a wholesale change at the federal level this year at all. But there are things like rescheduling cannabis. So it's more of from a Schedule I to a Schedule III is being discussed right now. That will open up a lot of different doors. It'll eliminate some of these tax. There's some tax restrictions that the IRS has imposed. That we can't utilize the same sort of tax benefits that other small businesses can utilize. So there's that. And also to open up the doors to more banking as well.
Okay.
But rest assured, like right now, as we stand, there are banks in New Jersey, credit unions in New Jersey that are banking all of us right now. So everybody that has a license has a checking account. We have a savings account. We're doing business with banks. It's just that a lot of banks choose not to do this until the federal law changes. But I expect to see some changes this year, just not wholesale changes.
Okay. And then on the CRC, I hear you saying that the business, the industry is looking for some uniformity, for some consistency. Is that the biggest thing you're looking for this year from the CRC? If not, I mean, what other policy changes you think
Sure.
the
Yeah.
agency might be able to come through?
And there are those things, right? So, for example, if you're a manufacturer, you're going to create these new products. It takes a long time for these approvals to come back. And again, so those who are established, those who already have been operating for a number of years, they're coming out with their products and they're doing great. They're coming up with some new innovative stuff that are really making consumers happy. So this is all good. But the smaller mom and pops are just trying to get started. To get their formulations approved, their ingredients approved by the state, that there's a way that we can do to speed up that process so we can get different products on the shelves of different stores, and that becomes that what happens is more offerings, more competition, and more offerings and more competition only benefits the consumer.
Right. Is that a staffing issue, getting moving? Because I hear that a lot about not just the CRC, but about a lot of state agencies that they're just understaffed and underfunded. Is it a question of just getting people to do the work, or are there changes that need to be made in how the CRC goes about its business?
I think first of all, the folks I know over at the CRC, they're all working hard. So it's not a matter of working
Well, I
hard.
wasn't suggesting that they
No,
didn't. I'm suggesting
very good. But what I'm
that
saying is that, I know people are really putting in the time to get these things through. I think it's a staffing issue from a resource perspective. If, of
Right.
course, if they had more people, then these things would be moving faster. But some of it's not really a staffing issue. Some of the regulatory changes are at the leadership level that they can happen, providing waivers or just changing some of the rules. So that can happen at the senior level. But as far as like the day-to-day folks working there, I know that they have a lot on their plate. I talk to whether it's people that I'm talking to that are servicing my particular business, our inspectors, our investigators. I talk to others as well. I talk to our members. So it's been very cooperative in that regard. But I think the things that are holding us up have to deal more with regulatory issues than it does a staffing issue.
Okay, and finally, before I let you go, I'm curious as to if you have a sense for what attitudes are like on the local level. A lot of towns, maybe most towns, if I remember correctly, opted out of the legal framework, with the idea that they could opt back in once they saw the way things were developing. Have the attitudes of municipal officials changed over the past couple of years, or is there or are you still or are you seeing some resistance? Where
So,
it really shouldn't be, or it didn't, doesn't have to be.
right. Well, I think a lot of it doesn't have to be. A lot of this stuff is associated with, again, ancient stereotypes and stigmas where the only education anybody had was a Cheech and Chong movie. So we have those things to go past. But you're right. When we first passed the referendum and the legislation was put into place, 70% of the towns opted out from having a cannabis business in their town. So 70%. So what we're seeing, the other 30%, they're moving forward, businesses are starting, and for a lot of them, not starting fast enough, again, because of some bureaucratic issues or fundraising issues. But we are starting to see towns, picking up the phone, calling us, asking our thoughts on what they should be looking at. They want to dip their toe into opening up their town for cannabis business because they get a benefit from it. They get 2% of the sales tax, you know, which is there's really no other industry except for the hotel industry that provides a local tax. So there's that benefit. So we're seeing towns slowly start to creep into the cannabis space. But that's the same thing we saw all across the country. So Colorado, Massachusetts, Washington State, you know, most towns opted out in the beginning. Then they see that their concerns are not being realized in the neighboring towns and that these neighboring towns are reaping the benefits of these tax dollars. So now those towns who are looking at tight budgets or staffing issues themselves are looking at the cannabis industry as a method to which they can raise additional revenue.
Okay, and your relationship with the officials in Riverside, how does that look?
It's fantastic. They've been great. So I'm in a great spot. I have a, you know, I'm on a main street called Scott Street, as you point out. So I'm on a main street. I have, you know, so most people are dispensaries have are operating on highway systems. That's where they zoned it. You know, Riverside has really embraced my particular business, and they've been outstanding. And I think a lot of towns, and I actually want to utilize my store and Riverside as an example for other towns to use, so that they can realize that this is a safe business. It's a job. It's a business that creates jobs. It's not disruptive. In fact, it's only a benefit. And I want to be, you know, I want to utilize our, you know, my town and my business as an example for other towns to look at.
Okay, that business is the Township Green Dispensary in Riverside.
That's correct.
Scott Rutter is the owner and founder of that. He's also the president of the Cannabis Business Association. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me. I really appreciate it, and I hope you'll come back and give us an update on how
Absolutely,
things are
Jeffrey.
going.
Thank you so much for this. I really appreciate it.
All right, and thank you for watching. Until next time, stay safe, everyone.